Hi, my name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and this is one in a series of mini podcasts which give an introduction to various accounting and legal topics. And today's podcast is on insolvency. So insolvency for companies, corporate insolvency we're going to talk about today, not individual insolvency. So what I'm going to cover today is a brief introduction to the different types of insolvency for companies and give you an idea about the meaning of the different types of language that are used and different types of terminology that are used in relation to insolvency. One of the things I find quite confusing sometimes when I'm listening, for example, to the news or reading a newspaper are the different terms that are used in relation to corporate insolvency. And often, you know, the media can use the wrong terms. So I'm going to give you a nice simple definitions and nice simple explanations of each of the three different types of insolvency. So what are those three different types of insolvency? Well, first of all, there's liquidation. So I'm going to talk to you about that. And then secondly, we've got receivership. Talk to you about that and what it means. And then thirdly, I'm going to talk to you about what's called administration. Okay, so we're going to start with liquidation. When a company is liquidated, what that means is basically the company is dead. So once a liquidation has taken place and the liquidator has finished his job, the company no longer exists. In fact, the liquidator could be referred to as the company's undertaker. Because the company is dead and all that the liquidator is doing is burying the company. The company is dead once it's put into liquidation. So in liquidation, the company is usually insolvent. And I say usually because of the three different insolvencies that I'm going to talk about, in one instance, the company will still be solvent. Normally, though, when you hear about a company going into liquidation, it's because the company is insolvent. And I'll explain what I mean by insolvent later on. So there are three types of liquidation, two voluntary liquidations and one compulsory liquidation. So voluntary liquidations can be of two types. There can be, first of all, a member's voluntary liquidation. A member's voluntary liquidation is where the shareholders decide, right, we're going to liquidate the company. Liquidating the company means selling off all of the company's assets and paying off all of the company's liabilities. And if the members are going to take charge of the liquidation, then the company must be solvent. In other words, it must have enough assets to pay off all of its liabilities. The second type of liquidation, and probably the most common in practice, is called a creditor's voluntary liquidation. Now here, the company is insolvent, and the company decides voluntarily by its shareholders taking what's called an extraordinary resolution, the shareholders decide to liquidate the company. But because the company is insolvent, and by that I mean it doesn't have enough assets to pay off its liabilities, because the company is insolvent, then the shareholders have to give control of the liquidation to the creditors of the company, the people who the company owes money to. The third type of liquidation is a compulsory liquidation. Now, a compulsory liquidation is where the court orders the company to be liquidated. The court will order the company to be liquidated on the basis of a number of different grounds in the Insolvency Act. The two most common grounds, though, where the court will order the liquidation is, first of all, where the company is insolvent, and that means that it's unable to pay its debts as they fall due. So creditors are unable to be paid for the monies that they're owed, and they will therefore go to court and ask the court to have the company liquidated. The second main ground that companies are liquidated is on what's called the just and equitable ground. And this is where the court thinks that it is fair to liquidate the company. That's just a general power, that just and equitable ground. For any reason, the court can liquidate the company if it feels it's fair to do so. So just to summarise, let's think of a scenario that we might have where a liquidation might be appropriate. Let's say you were a creditor and you were owed a large amount of money by the company and you felt that there was no hope of the company continuing to exist because it had such a massive amount of debts owed to you and other businesses. And the company, let's say, weren't paying you the amount of money that you were owed. Well, your options would be to go to the company and ask the company to put itself into liquidation. And In the scenario I've given, it would appear that the company is insolvent. It probably doesn't have enough money to pay off its debts. And so you would ask the company to do a creditor's voluntary liquidation. This would probably be best all round. It would be nice and quick and relatively simple. If the company refused to do that, then a slightly slower and perhaps more costly option would be for you as a creditor to go to court and ask the court to do a compulsory liquidation on the ground that the company were unable to pay its debts as they fell due. That's the normal sort of scenario that would happen and that would lead to a liquidation. So that's liquidation. Secondly, we have receivership. So when does a receivership arise? Well, a receivership arises when somebody has lent the company money, let's say a bank, and that lender has taken security over some or all of the company's assets. So let's say a bank lent the company £5 million and decided to take security over the company's property, let's say their freehold head office building. If the company defaulted on the loan, that is, they weren't making the repayments of the loan when the loan was due, then the lender will have the right to appoint a receiver, and the job of the receiver is to go into the company to sell off the asset that the security is over. In my example, that would be the freehold head office building, and then to use the proceeds to pay back the lender. Receivers will also have the duty to pay back certain other creditors of the business as well at the same time that they're paying back the lender. Now, there are two types of receivers. There are receivers and there are administrative receivers. A receiver behaves in the way I just described. So a receiver will be appointed where a lender has a security over one or a couple of the company's assets and the company defaults on the loan. An administrative receiver would be appointed where the lender has taken security over all or most of the company's assets. So, for example, if the bank were lending to the company a very large amount of money, it might say, well, in return for that loan, we want to take security over all of your business assets. And if the company defaults on that sort of loan, what the bank will do is it will appoint an administrative receiver. And an administrative receiver will have the right to manage the business while that administrative receiver is selling off the business assets and paying back the lender. Now, I have to tell you here that on loans created after September 2003, administrative receivers can't be appointed. Okay, so that's receivership. And then thirdly, we've got administration. Now, administration orders are the newest of the three different types of insolvency. There were no administration orders available before the Insolvency Act 1986 created the idea of administration. And the idea of an administrator is that they could potentially go into an insolvent company and save the life of that insolvent company. So if a liquidator is the company's undertaker, then an administrator is often known as the company's surgeon. So an administrator is appointed to try and do one of two things, either to rescue the company as it currently is, or to get a better result for the creditors in a liquidation. The administrator's primary role then will be to hopefully save the company, or at least save some parts of it. They may sell off some of the businesses that are in a group of companies that are insolvent and try and save the core company, for example. So an administrator, once appointed, comes up with a plan of how to save the business, or if he can't save the business, then how to get a better result for the creditors if the company is eventually liquidated. The administrator agrees that plan with the creditors, and during the period that the company is in administration, the company is protected from any other insolvency actions starting, like, for example, a liquidation starting or a receivership starting. Once the administrator has finished his plan, achieved a saving of the company, for example, or put the company into a better state for liquidation, then the administrator leaves his role and hands the business over either to the directors, if he's saved the business, or over to the liquidator if he feels that there is no other choice but liquidation for the business. Who appoints an administrator? Well, it used to be the case that administrators could only be appointed by going to court and getting the court to order the administrator to be appointed. But nowadays, the company itself can appoint an administrator outside of the court, which means that the appointment can be done a little bit quicker. Okay, so we have three types of insolvency. First of all, liquidation, where either through the members deciding or through the court ordering it, the company is basically killed off and needs to be buried by the liquidator, and the liquidator simply sells off the assets and pays off the liabilities of the business. Then we have the receivership. The receiver is a person who's acting on behalf of a lender. The lender has a charge over the assets of the business, and the receiver is simply selling off that asset that's charged, or those assets that are charged, and paying back the lender. And finally, we have an administrator who's like the company's surgeon, who's there to try and save the company if he can. That's his primary role. And once he's achieved that, he'll then hand the company in a much better financial state back to the directors, also some newly appointed directors, and the company can carry on in business. And that's a basic introduction to the different types of insolvency. My name is Steve Carlisle. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.